Coming up on today's program.
This is the mood that prevails throughout the animated special. A constant tug between Charlie Brown's pessimism and the rest of the Peanuts gang's positivity. And this music understands and embodies it just so.
WISO's Evan Miller reviews a classic album and TV special that's now 60 years old. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. We'll hear from Evan a little bit later in our program and also meet WISO staff member Lucas Hummel. Up first, an artist from Montgomery County has received Best in Show at the 2025 Ohio Arts Council's biennial exhibition. The quilt, titled The House Always Wins, was selected out of nearly 2,000 entries. Dayton artist Alicia Franz handmade the piece with over 170 spent lottery tickets. Those thousands of tickets she and her family found came from Franz's father-in-law. He bought them as he struggled secretly with a dementia-fueled gambling addiction. WISO's Shea Frank spoke to the artist about the symbolism behind her award-winning piece.
If you were to walk into the gallery and experience the piece itself, from a distance, it just looks like a quilt, but then it's also very iridescent and shiny, and it's still hand-sewn or stitched together, just like a traditional quilt. The House Always Wins is constructed in a log cabin style pattern. And if you are familiar with quilts, then you know that each pattern has a bit of language to it. It's got symbolism. And that particular pattern is supposed to symbolize home and security and family.
I want to dive deeper into that because I know when we were looking into this, another reason that it came across my beat is I cover food insecurity. And that has to do with food systems, which are often tied into poverty, much like the theme for your piece.
Unfortunately, a couple of years ago, we discovered that my father-in-law was having some pretty massive health issues and was showing signs of pretty severe dementia. My husband looked into, you know, how to fix the bills that hadn't been paid and realized that there were hundreds of thousands of dollars missing from the accounts. And when we dug a little deeper, we discovered that my father-in-law had had a really crippling gambling addiction. We uncovered boxes upon boxes of lottery tickets. And it was really sickening. It was so traumatic to discover that all of the money that like we could have been using or should be using to care for him was gone.
I also wanted to ask you how you came to the name The House Always Wins.
Because of the log cabin pattern, really. I was thinking about home. You know, and then suddenly like, oh, it's a home, it's a house. Oh, the house always wins. That's such a good play on words.
Do you think it's important to use your work to comment on major issues like gambling and addiction?
I think it's important to comment in any way you can on the points in life that you think are important. My specific language just happens to be visual arts, and making could be any form of artistic communication. And I think that that is super important for anyone.
So how much time did you spend creating this quilt?
It took months to make the quilt. And some of it was that there were a lot of emotional blocks. And as an artist, like when you uncover like really uncomfortable emotions and issues in your work, it makes it take longer, but it also like, you know, in the back of your head, like, oh, this is going to really affect people. And this is a direction that I should be going.
So how many pieces in total are there in the whole series?
I have three currently. I'm working on a fourth. The fourth is really quite large. It's going to be probably about 9 feet by 9 feet.
Do you have any plans to enter into any other shows coming up?
Actually, I have a piece of art that was just accepted into a show in Indianapolis. And I plan to just try to keep growing and at least spark conversations in this particular series of work as far as I can take it. I was really surprised that so many other people shared the same kind of story. And that really said to me that this particular series of work is meaningful and could start a really great discussion with the community about what happens and why this happens.
So you have an artist talk online coming up on December 16th.
It starts at 11 a.m. And basically, I'm going to be talking about my life and how art has been a constant arc throughout my life. And then also the inspiration behind The House Always Wins. The display is up until January 9th. And it is at the Rife Gallery, which is in Columbus. But if you want to come and see me, I have all kinds of work in my studio. I do have a studio that is open to the public a couple of days a month at Front Street.
Thanks again, Elisha Frantz, for sharing your story and artwork with us here at WYSO.
We've got pictures of that quilt on our website at WYSO.org. And if you or someone you know is struggling with a gambling addiction, call 1-800-589-9966. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney, pleased to be with you this weekend. And also sharing some space with us for the weekend is WYSO's Lucas Hummel. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
We do these interviews with the staff so our listeners can get to know people who kind of keep the station running. And why don't you tell us what you do here at WYSO?
I do fundraising support, essentially. I'm the membership associate or coordinator. So I send members thank yous. I interact with our members on a daily basis and process the payments and go represent us at events.
So Jackie Winfrey is your boss, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And you two really do a lot behind the scenes. So we really appreciate that. Tell us a little bit about how you came to know about WYSO and how you got on the staff here.
I actually didn't know anything about WYSO until I was a senior in college at Wittenberg, and a fellow alumnus, Luke Dennis, the general manager okay. at this year's station, came and gave a talk to a group of interns that I was in. And from there, I came and got an internship like that fall. I just kind of stuck around, and no one can get rid of me.
You know, that happens a lot in public radio. And a lot of it's because people really don't want to leave. So what do you find interesting about your work?
Oh, I love the opportunities I get to meet people. I'm big on connecting with other people. And, I mean, I meet all sorts of people through events, through membership, through volunteer coordination. Like, there's all sorts of things I get to do. Very excited about that.
That's great. We've got a great crew here. And let's talk a little bit about outside interest. But first, I want to know, are you a Dayton native, Miami Valley born?
I am not. I'm from southeastern Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm from a little town called Louisville. That's a little more in the eastern part of Indiana. So now I'm here.
Big family, small family?
Very small family. Born into a farming family in Indiana, as one is. And then my father's from Chicago, so not a whole bunch of time with extended relatives. It's just two brothers and a mother and a father.
Okay. Did you enjoy farm life?
No, I did not.
Hence your move to the Miami Valley?
And, yeah.
So I know you're a music fan.
I am a music fan and a creator of music. Yeah.
Oh, so what do you create?
I create my own songs. I I'm a singer-songwriter, and then I'm also in a band and occasionally throw shows and stuff like that.
Who is this woman
staring back at me. She's so beautiful, seems unafraid. But I'm not her, at least not yet. I'm not her, at least not yet. Most of it's folky, very lo-fi, self-produced, self-recorded.
Do you play around the Dayton area?
I do play around the Dayton area. I've had a couple shows at Blind Bob's, a couple shows at Oregon Express, a couple shows at Belmont Billiards, and then, yeah, I play up in, help book occasionally and play up in Springfield at, like, the State Theater in Hat.
We've talked a little bit that, you know, Belmont Billiards is not your grandfather's Belmont Billiards.
No, it's not. It's a wonderful, wonderful place now, though. I love what they've done with the place. I love Ike. What a fantastic individual. I love Jackie, too. What a fantastic individual. And, yeah, Belmont Billiards is quite the place, quite the scene. Lots of youth.
Yeah. How did you get into music? Is your family kind of musical or just something you picked up on your own?
My family is kind of musical. I grew up around bluegrass, and my dad plays guitar and everything. But I kind of – I was in school and – kind of going through something, and then I was like, I don't really want to be in school anymore, but I had to be because it was my senior year, so I kind of just acted at Wittenberg, and then, like, literally acted at Wittenberg, and then did my own side music stuff, and I've been developing that.
Cool. Is acting something you want to continue to do or have?
It would be interesting to do, for sure. I really liked it. I got really into it. I got really into, like, character work and stuff like that.
So, final question. We've got a lot of pet lovers here on staff at YSO. Tell me about your home situation there.
Yeah, I've got a wonderful little toddler, a two-year-old golden retriever called Maiden, who everyone said, get to 2 years and then she'll be perfect. And that is not true. She's still quite cantankerous, but I love her, and she's my daughter.
Yeah, that's great. So you'll send us a picture.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Lucas Hummel with WISO. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, of course. It's been great to talk to you too, Jay.
Lucas Hummel with their track Woman on WYSO. You can meet more WYSO staff and volunteers on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WYSO Weekend, and you know what? I think we need a little Christmas. And this week, the classic TV special, A Charlie Brown Christmas, and its soundtrack album celebrated their 60th anniversaries. The album, composed by jazz pianist Vince Guaraldi and performed by his trio, is a longtime favorite of WYSO's assistant music director, Evan Miller. Today, we listen back to his 2022 reflections on what makes this album such a classic. Here's Evan.
If you're around the WYSO studios as the wintry months roll in, you will inevitably hear me bring up my undying love for this album. With such supposed hyperboles as, A Charlie Brown Christmas is and always will be the greatest holiday album ever made, or something like that. In spite of how large this claim is, I do really believe it to be true. And the fact that this album is in its basic description just a soundtrack to a children's cartoon Christmas special makes it all the more fascinating, and even puzzling. This album didn't have to be this way. Didn't have to have the impact that it did and still does. But I believe not just the source material, but the way the music is treated with such care by Vince Guaraldi and crew is exactly what makes it hold this great distinction, what makes it crystallize the mixture of feelings and moods that the holiday season brings so magically. The album is split between jazz impressions of holiday standards, or just straight Beethoven in one case, and Guaraldi original tunes. Both baskets of songs are wonderful, but for my money, the originals are where the work really shines. From the frosty glide of skating, to the drive and anticipation of Christmas is coming, to that joyous, iconic bass line of Linus and Lucy. Guaraldi and his trio make a delightful, wintry world out of their small forces. The album's artistic and literal centerpiece, though, is the waltzy shuffle of Christmas Time Is Here. What makes this song so special is how potently it carries the combination of wistful remembrance and dashes of melancholy that pervade the holiday season. The lyrics bring happiness and cheer, but the music suggests something else, with drummer Jerry Grinnelli and bassist Fred Marshall bringing a gentle lilt under Guaraldi's introspective chords. This is the mood that prevails throughout the animated special, a constant tug between Charlie Brown's pessimism and the rest of the Peanuts gang's positivity. And this music understands and embodies it just so. The children's choir is the song's crown jewel, their imperfect voices the perfect vessel for lyrics on holiday tradition and splendor. The dichotomy of such young voices carrying these more adult sentiments is what completes the song, with its final words of, "Oh, that we could always see such spirit through the year, the yearning for that Yuletide warmth in other times where temperatures rise, but fellowship cools." The holiday standards taken on here are all masterfully done, from the stately opening of O Tannenbaum to the floating textural interpretation of the little drummer boy as My Little Drum. The one that has always mystified and captivated me most, however, is the album's closing track, The Christmas Song. With an opening sweep across the keys and a little push and pull, Guaraldi transmits some hidden well of emotion in this Christmas classic that's just transfixing. Something about the trio's take on the tune gets me misty-eyed, even a little choked up, to this day. This album is a constantly growing memory of mine for me. From soundtrack to drives around my snowy old neighborhood years ago, to dancing around my living room with my partner, gleefully twirling along with the record as it spins in the corner. How this collection synthesizes the glow of the season with the melancholy of winter, I think is what makes it so special to listeners decades on. What's made it a perennial presence on speakers and shelves all over. Every year, I get so excited to pull it back out, and a little sad to put it away as the holidays recede. But just like I know the landscape will change and temperatures will drop a year from now again, I know that these 11 magical songs will be waiting for me, and I'll be as ready as ever. For WYSO Music, I'm Evan Miller.
That review originally aired in 2022 as part of our Album of the Month series. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. Up next on WYSO, today from the Ohio Newsroom.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom, a merry tuba Christmas.
Support for the Ohio Newsroom comes from Cerity Partners. Cerity Partners' Cleveland-based wealth management practice is a neighbor offering objective advice with national strength and resources. Information available at CerityPartners.com/NPR.
This December, Today from the Ohio Newsroom is going all over the state, far and near, to spread some holiday cheer. I'm Claire Roth. this festive Friday, we're going to a Christmas concert, not with silver bells or drummer boys, but with tubas, the Ohio Newsroom's Aaron Gottsacker reports.
If you're part of an orchestra, here's a line you probably don't hear too often.
Yeah, the melody with this one starts in the lowest tuba part.
But at Tiffin Tuba Christmas, it's all about that bass.
One, two, three.
To hear tubas with a melody is something different. Usually it's just the oompa or the bass of in a piece in an orchestra. But to hear Good King Wenceslas with bass tubas, it's fantastic.
That's Dan Korfman, a retired band director and co-conductor of Tiffin Tuba Christmas. The concert has been a tradition in the Northwest Ohio City for more than three decades. But the origins of Tuba Christmas date back even further, to 1974. That's when tuba player extraordinaire Harvey Phillips first gathered over 300 tubists, baritonists, and euphoniumists to play Christmas carols at the ice rink at New York City's Rockefeller Center. Phillips hosted the concert in honor of his tuba teacher, Bill Bell, who was born on Christmas Day and had died a few years prior.
It's just a tribute to some of the great teachers in tuba education.
Today, around 300 communities across the country and the world host their own tuba Christmas concerts, including 19 in Ohio. Here at First Lutheran Church in Tiffin, the 40-plus musicians are from all ages and experience levels, from 13-year-old Caleb Norman.
I've been playing baritone for about 2 months, maybe.
To 79-year-old Bill Overmeyer, who's been playing since he was about Caleb's age.
My father knew somebody that was in the Ohio State Marching Band that dotted the I. And the only way you can dot the I is to be a tuba player. And that's how I got my start.
He's talking about a tradition at Ohio State football games where marching band members spell out the word Ohio in cursive on the field. A lone, wide-brimmed sousaphone gets to dot the I. It's a big honor, and Overmeyer's done it three times. Julie Stumphauser says she picked up a euphonium after studying music education in college.
The lower you go in the brass department, the crazier you get. The tubas are, of course, the craziest of all, but euphonium is second best.
The chorus of low brass admittedly sounds a little different than a traditional orchestra.
It probably sounds like a herd of elephants.
Warm and marshmallowy.
Oftentimes, my mother described the tuba as playing fart noises, quite frankly. It is easily described as is the lowest sounding instrument you're going to hear. So anytime you hear a low, almost rumbling sound from time to time, that could be the tuba.
For players like Dennis Williams, Tuba Christmas is special because it's the rare chance for the back of the band instrument to take center stage with the melody.
Being in a group full of tuba players, it's very endearing knowing that we all get our moment to shine for the first time ever since we've played the instrument.
At Tiffin Tuba Christmas, the sound is so low, the church pews vibrate with each note as the musicians wish everyone in the audience a Merry Christmas from the bottom of their horns. In Tiffin, I'm Aaron Gottsacker.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you Monday.
Find lots more from the Ohio Newsroom on our website at wyso.org. You can also find our series, Veterans Voices. In this new season of Veterans Voices, we're exploring how service members transform their experiences into art. Here's the host for this season, Marine Corps veteran and musician Zach Sliver.
The Ohio Veteran Arts Initiative is a statewide program at the Central Ohio VA that gives veterans free art classes. Heather Seymour is the director.
So the Veterans Arts Initiative falls under the umbrella of whole health, looking at preventative ways in which we can support both physical and mental health. Sometimes it can be quite hard to verbalize past traumas or to verbalize what's actually going on in your mental landscape, but having a side door to processing a painting or a collage or a piece of writing where you're able to talk about your lived experience or talk about your emotional landscape through this aesthetic or through an art piece. Becomes sometimes a lot easier for folks to really connect with themselves and to storytell in a different way. And that's really the basis of the Veterans Arts Initiative, is to increase the storytelling and to create connection on a very human level that will work towards reducing veteran suicide. We know that our arts program has saved lives because we get emails and we get phone calls and teary messages all the time that this program saved my life.
If you're thinking the arts are a new thing in the military, they're really not. In fact, they've been part of the story for more than a century.
A lot of people don't know how much the arts have been integrated within the military. The first paintings on the walls were of war, and how drumming has been used throughout history to notify, you know, soldiers on the field. There's amazing photographs of folks from Civil War to World War I, World War II, some of them doing needlepoint at Walter Reed. And there's a rich history of leather crafting and music. And so I think we don't tend to think of the VA as this very creative space. Or maybe we say, oh, well, this is a wonderful new program. Well, it actually isn't new. It's been going on for years and years and years and years. There's something for everyone. We have painting and sculpture classes. We have some theater and music. We have guitar and harmonica classes. We have leather crafting at Tandy Leather. Just come check it out. You can walk in, and if it's not your jam, you can walk out. I thank veterans for showing up to our Whole Health and VAI workshops, because when veterans show up, they're paying it forward to the next veteran, because without veterans, we don't have funding. And without veterans showing up, we don't have participation numbers to show this is a need. And that's really a big statement, but when you break it down, I think what we're doing is we're connecting people back to themselves and back to other people.
Veterans Voices is presented by WrightPath Credit Union. Additional support comes from the Dayton Ombudsman Veterans Transition Team and Montgomery County Veterans Service Commission. Veterans Voices is produced here at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO.
This is Bird Note. Strident calls of seabirds fill the salty air at Palmyra Atoll, 1,000 miles south of Hawaii in the South Pacific. The atoll is a ring-shaped island encircling a lagoon. The island rests atop an extinct undersea volcano, its surface densely covered with trees and other plants. Living coral reefs lie nearby just below the ocean's surface. Black nottis and red-footed boobies fly above the trees that they nest and roost in, a rainforest tree called Grand Devil's Claws. There's a mutual relationship between the trees, the nesting seabirds, and the outlying coral. The bird's guano falls from the trees, enriching the soil. Rain washes nutrients from the guano into the ocean, enhancing the health of the coral ecosystem, which in turn supports the seabirds. Palmyra Atoll lost many native trees due to U.S. military activity during World War II. Invasive rats wreaked havoc on the island's wildlife, but it's now a nature conservancy preserve set within a national wildlife refuge. Conservationists eradicated the rats, and they're restoring the rainforest to strengthen the fruitful marriage of seabirds, rainforest, and reef. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
Bird Note, once again, putting a wrap on this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners. I'm Jerry Kenney. Our theme music for this podcast is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. You can download and subscribe to this program wherever you find your podcasts. We've got more conversations and highlights next weekend. Please join us then.